Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. And good to Throwback Thursday. By the way, programming note, Ron and I are off tomorrow.
Wait, so what? This is,
one told me.
No, you told me.
Oh, that's right. I did tell you.
You did, because you got a thing going on in your kid's school.
I do. I got to go become a watchdog for the
day. That's awesome. Which, so we both decided, we had a busy week last week, and
we're tired.
We're going to take a three-day weekend.
Yeah, we're not as young and spry as we used to in Vegas. Vegas got the best of us, I guess.
Very true. All right, what's the good of the day?
The good of the day. I'm giving it to that lone fan who stormed the court.
I've not seen that video.
So there was one fan. He stormed the court when Detroit Mercy beat, I'm going to try to remember this. It's Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis.
IPIUP. It's like
IUPUI.
They are the Mastodons, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And they have the terrible
IUPUI. Is that IUPUI?
IUPUI.
Yeah, okay.
So IUPUI lost to Detroit Mercy. Why is this significant? It was Detroit Mercy's first win in 27 games.
Wow.
And there was a lone fan who stormed the court, jumping, hopping around on the court, and no one there to celebrate.
No
with
one
them.
Wanted to help him?
No one came out to the court. There wasn't any fans. I mean, you figured it again.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
You know, you're 0-26 or 0-27. You're 0-26 on the season, I believe. 0-27 since their last win, which came in the conference tournament last year.
I just called up KenPom rankings. Detroit Mercy, 357.
Yeah.
1-26. But IUPUI, the team they beat, is 361. So they're even lower than Detroit Mercy.
Yep. No.
But that's fantastic. That guy should get all the gear. Mercy should give him, like, carte blanche. Buy all the stuff you want. Take all the sweatshirts and T-shirts and hats that you want. For Detroit Mercy. Good Lord.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny. I mean, it's a funny video. If you get a chance, look it up, guys. It's a funny video. You just see, the clock's counting. Because it wasn't even a close game. It was, I think the final score was like 80-something to 60-something. So you knew it was happening. You knew it was going to be a win. And, he didn't even... Would you have called friends and said, hey, man, get to the arena quickly. We're going to storm the court.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Absolutely.
We're about to win.
Absolutely. That's, I stormed a court at the University of New Hampshire when they broke the longest home losing skid in Division I basketball. Me and my buddy stormed the court. There was a couple of other people that did, but, we weren't alone. Nobody was there, but we still found a way to do it. I even got on ESPN. I was on ESPN because they ran one of those, and just as one of those kicker things they do at the end. And they had used a video from Channel 9 that was used. But me and my buddy are running across the camera on the court when New Hampshire beat. I don't even know who they beat. I think it'd be Holy Cross. But it's fun. It's not as fun unless there's a couple hundred people doing it. But when you're all, it's just a couple of you. But you know what? This guy, congratulations. He should be applauded for this. He should be the biggest Detroit Mercy fan of them all. Are they the Titans, if I'm not mistaken? Detroit Mercy Titans? I think they are.
I think so, yeah.
But anyway, nevertheless, he should be the biggest fan.
Yeah. No, and I think you're absolutely right. He should get gear.
If they do something, I don't know what they do at Detroit Mercy. If they, like, ring a bell or bang a gong or whatever it is that, whatever famous thing. He should lead the chant.
He should lead the chant.
Good for him. All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, it's not really a bad. It's just, it's something that you and I will miss.
Uh-huh.
And that is, it was announced yesterday that after 40 years, Tony, this will be Vern Lundquist's final Masters.
Oh, my God. 40 years at Augusta
40
National.
40 years at Augusta.
40 years at Augusta National.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So I had this one, which might be one of his most famous clips.
Yeah.
And he's picked out a landing spot that is a good 25 feet above the hole.
There's a good chance he doesn't get this inside DeMarco's ball.
And this is Tiger Woods chipping on the 16th green.
Yeah.
At Augusta National.
Never really think about it. Golf's not a very good radio
sport.
It's
not really, yeah, it's not a good radio sport.
Well, here it comes.
But here you go.
Oh, my goodness. Have you seen anything like that?
Well, we got to set that one up because, unfortunately, golf is definitely not a radio thing.
It's funny because you and I can sit back and we can visualize exactly what all these moments are.
Woods was chipping on the 16th green.
That might be the dumb right there.
He had to chip it. Where he had to chip it was way away from the hole. He had to hit it on an upslope.
Yeah.
So that the ball would come back down the slope.
Can he even see the hole from where he is? I mean, I know you can see like the flag.
He turned completely away from the hole. Yeah, he was really away from the hole. So he had to chip it up. And what was wild about the chip was kind of like half on the like beginning of the rough and half on the fairway. So he really had to get the club through that ball. It wasn't even on clean turf to get a clean chip. And he still was able to get it up and to know the slope and to have it come back. And it had to come back down at the right speed, and it just hung there. The Nike logo hung there and then fell in. Lundqvist also has another famous call. In 1986, he was on the 17th hole. Jack Nicklaus was making a charge on the back nine, and Nicklaus had a birdie putt on 17 right after he nearly had an ace on 16. And Lundqvist, as the putt was tracking, Lundqvist's call was, "Yes, sir!" And that pumped up, the crowd was pumped up, and the energy behind Nicklaus went to 18. So Lundqvist has seen a lot, 40 years is a lot of stuff. So 40 years, this is one, so he's 84 was his first Masters with CBS 40 years ago. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What a great, that was Ben Crenshaw winning that Masters. And then he saw Nicklaus in 86. He was there for the collapse of Norman in 96, Tiger Woods in 97, Tiger Woods in the Tiger Slam, Tiger Woods in 2019, Phil Mickelson winning the Masters.
Finally.
Right? I mean, that's a lot. Ben Crenshaw winning it again in the 90s. You know, whatnot. But
Tiger winning it again.
Tiger winning it five times.
Yeah. So, but I mean, getting that one in 2019.
2019. Yeah, just I mentioned that.
Yeah.
So he's been there for a lot of the great Masters moments, and his iconic again that he was a late hole call when the Masters would heat up 16 early in the career 17. He's awesome. Vern Lundqvist is great. Vern Lundqvist is the guy I always kid saying I don't have a career that warrants a book. I've seen a lot, but I don't warrant a book. Vern Lundqvist warrants a book. Multiple volumes of a book. I mean, he called the Fog game. He called the Leitner game. I mean, the endless stuff he has done in his career.
What's
crazy
weird is I feel like it was just yesterday that he retired from college football.
Right. All the SEC stuff
that
he has seen throughout the years.
You know, and I can't help it. There's a lot of symmetry right now between him and Jim Nantz.
Yeah. So Vern Lundqvist. He lives in Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
That's a great place to live.
Great place to live. If you have a job that you could pick a place to live in America, but your job is really going to other things, like whatever your assignment is, Steamboat Springs is great. I worked with a guy that worked for ABC News, and he lived in Evergreen, Colorado, because his job was wherever ABC had the plane. That was where he had. He used to tell stories. He goes, "I had a bag packed all the time. He goes, "We would be sitting there at dinner. The phone would ring. I would pick it up. It would be like, "Hey, we got a plane for you at the airport. We need you to go to Beirut." And he'd be like, that's where he would go. He'd go upstairs. He'd get the bag, and he'd be off to the airport, and the plane would be ready for him. And he would go to Beirut or wherever the turmoil was. I couldn't either.
I couldn't live that life.
I couldn't
for two reasons. One, I don't think I would do well. Like if you were to say, "Hey, you know, we're going to stick you in the middle of the worst place on the planet right now."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're sending you to a war zone.
Yeah. I don't think I could do that. But the other one is I don't think I would handle the shock or the surprise of where my next job is taking me all the time.
Right. Lundqvist, it was easy because Lundqvist would be like, I'm going to the, like, you may not know where you're going, what assignment you're getting for the NFL, like, until you get it, but you know you're going to, and then you would get
beginning
it for the week.
Beginning of April, you knew where you were going. But
in the beginning of April, you knew where you were going. You knew where, in March, you were probably getting told, okay, the Indianapolis region is going to be you.
Yeah.
And then in April, we're all going to Augusta, baby. You know, we're all going to Augusta. So, yeah, Vern Lundqvist is great. But that SEC stuff, you – legendary. Legendary SEC broadcaster. I mean, it – him – when he would open up at Bryant-Denny Stadium or the Swamp or anywhere else, Auburn, or anywhere else in the SEC, it was a big, big, big moment. He carried a lot of those gigantic, gigantic moments in SEC football lore. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing along, the good, the bad, and the dumb. 1998 is our throwback Thursday. On this date, Dale Earnhardt won the Daytona 500, his only Daytona 500 victory. And it was very celebrated because he had not won, and he was wondering, people were wondering if he would ever get a Daytona 500 win, and he finally got one in 1998. But we're doing the good, the bad, and the dumb. Real quick on Vern Lundqvist, because I'm glad you... glad you brought that up, that it's kind of sad he's done with the Masters after 40 years. Man, we were just coming up with some other ones that he did.
Yeah.
Again, there was the fogging, but he did kick six. He the Auburn-Alabama game. He was on the call for that. The Leitner one, the Leitner one, I would love to know the aftermath of those.
And like
details.
You said, that, you know, the other thing we were talking about, too, like where you said, you know, there should be a book. And I agree, there should be a book about, you know, some of the great calls he had in his life. But I almost feel like it needs to be a book turned into a documentary.
Yeah.
Because as I'm reading it, I want to see these plays. Because they are some of the more iconic plays in sports. You know, they're the ones that you do. I mean, every beginning of March, I've already seen it. We're not even in March, and I just saw it the other day, the Leitner shot. And I don't even remember what it was in context with.
I have a golf video game, the latest PGA Tour video game, and they have the Masters in it, and they have Frank Nabilo and Rich Lerner, who are Golf Channel guys. They do the commentary, and you know how that works. They go into a studio and they record a million different lines, and it takes weeks and weeks to put that all together. But when you are at Augusta, when you're playing around at Augusta, and they bring up Vern Lundqvist. They bring up his iconic calls in the commentary when you're playing. And it's like, that's how important he's been. Like, it just was a simple, I mean, it's two broadcasters talking about another broadcaster, but it was enough to get into the game. Like, the game, they talk about his iconic calls of Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus. But I was just looking through the list of other things he's called. He called Super Bowl 13, Steelers and Cowboys, Jackie Smith dropping a ball in the end zone. Right? Again, all South
Is
Carolina.
Steelers, Cowboys? That's a long time ago.
Yeah, Steelers, Cowboys, a long time ago.
Cowboy he called fans one of my, don't even remember it.
He called one of the biggest sporting events. He was on the call for one of the biggest sporting events in my marriage. In 2006, South Carolina was playing unranked. South Carolina was playing number 6 Florida. And Ryan Suckup, Mr. Irrelevant, by the way, Ryan Suckup, was attempting a 48-yard field goal. At the end of the game, this was what would give South Carolina the win, would have upset Florida, would have destroyed their opportunity to win national championship. And Jarvis Moss blocked it. He was on the call for that. He was on the call for so many iconic moments. I mean, just unbelievable. The prayer at Jordan-Hare, he was on that. All the SEC games. But again, the Leitner call, I mean, you know, there's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes! I mean, in the aftermath of that, the destruction of Kentucky, the emotional destruction of Kentucky was coming out of probation and was just trying to get back into the national scene and almost knocked off Duke. And then Christian Leitner just owning again college basketball like he always did in his 4 years at Duke. Vern Lundqvist is one of the greats, absolutely one of the greats. But I also didn't know that he was calling figure skating for the Olympics. He was on the Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan
call. Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I mean, jeez Louise.
Tanya Harding. No.
That was where she put up her skate and was like, I have laces. I can't. That was, remember that one? That was in Lillehammer. Lillehammer, Norway. One of the smallest venues hosting the Olympics. But that was one of the most watched sporting events in history of television, was when the ladies' skate portion came up and Tonya Harding was on the team, even though there was a lot of rumors. It wasn't proven until later. And she still denies it, by the way. Still denies it to this day that she had anything to do with that. But Vern Lundquist was on the call for that. All right, well, what is the bad of the day?
Oh, you mean the dumb.
I mean the dumb. We're already at the dumb. Okay.
Yeah, the dumb of the day.
I'm sorry. The bad was he was leaving the Masters, not the good that he had an amazing career.
No, yeah. It's the fact that he's leaving the Masters because he will be missed.
Yeah, that's right.
He will be missed, and I don't know who they're going to have to replace him. But the dumb of the day, it's not really dumb as well. It's one of those weird, it's a gray area here, Tony. And that is that there's controversy happening at Penn State.
Penn State controversy? What could possibly it be?
There's a group of trustees who are making a push to rename the field at Beaver Stadium Joe Paterno Field.
Oh, here we go. I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. Now, on the one hand, you know, we all know the reason why the downfall of Paterno. Yeah, we all remember that. Unless you were what, 4 or 5 or 6 or 7. I don't know how long that seems like.
It was about 12, 13 years ago.
Ah, wow, it seems. I don't know why it doesn't seem that long. But on the other hand, the statue was still not up. The NCAA made him vacate wins, but those wins have since been reinstated. There is a library already on campus that's.
I don't think the wins should have been. That scandal was bad. It's horrific. It's terrible. It had nothing to do with cheating had nothing to do with anything on the field.
I think the NCAA didn't know how
to
punish it.
You want to say a player was ineligible? Fine. I get it. I don't like vacated wins. It's not my – I don't like it because it takes away something we all saw. But if you want to say a player was ineligible or they cheated or whatever, I get why you're doing that. This is something completely different. It's horrible, but it had nothing to do with the victories on the field.
Yeah. So – but there is a library on campus that still bears his name.
Wow.
So I don't know. I mean, it's becoming it's a slow moving controversy, or maybe they're just hoping like no one's going to pay attention to it enough that it just happens one day that you know the Nittany Lions take the Joe Paterno Field at Beaver Stadium.
I'm going to tell you, if I'm a betting guy, and I'm not, but if I'm leaning towards yes or no on that change, I'm going to say no.
You're gonna say
I'm
no.
I'm gonna say in the end, I don't think they'll change the name. I think that there's, I think because two things. I think there is a generation that is coming up that is starting to get a little bit of power. Not quite yet. They're starting to get a little bit more power. That really, that they may have been like 10 when that 10, 11, 12 when that scandal hit. And now they're in their early 20s. When they get to be their 30s and they're more active in this, I think it's going to be slow moving, and I think they're going to be more influential in the, no, nothing to do with this guy. It wasn't part of my era. It wasn't part of my time. But again, people with money tend to be older, and they tend to be a lot more powerful. And if you've got people with money that really want this guy commemorated,
yeah,
their money always makes the world go around, right?
Can you make the argument? Like, you made the argument for, you know, hey, you shouldn't vacate wins because that was stuff that was on the field, right? Can you make the argument that, hey, we're honoring the coach?
No.
Not the man.
No. You can't. They're together. It's a good question. It's a very good question because can you separate the achievements of a guy to the character of the guy? I think it's hard to do.
Yeah, no.
It's OJ, really. I mean, it is
OJ.
It's similar to OJ. Like, can we honor the 2,000-yard rusher? Can we honor a guy that was one of the more electric football players of all time, Heisman Trophy winner, one of the biggest stars USC had ever produced in a school filled with stars? He's one of the top stars.
But you know what's funny, though?
He was a movie star. He was a television star.
Aside from the public outcry of OJ or, you know, the fact that he did go to jail for trying to steal his stuff, what punishments has he really received?
Oh, nothing. OJ?
Yeah.
Nothing. He gets to keep his pension.
Yeah, he's still in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, yes, he still has to pay well, that was a weird thing, right?
Still has his Heisman. Well, I don't know if he has his actual Heisman, but His, you know, the Heisman Award is still next to his name.
He still had to pay Ron and Ron's family.
Right.
Right.
But based off of what he's earning now, not based on what he actually is earning, because they can't touch his pension.
They can't touch his pension. That's right. Because that's why he moved to Florida. So they can't touch his pension. But he also hasn't paid the family back anything, I don't think, or very little of the money he was awarded in the civil case.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Right? And Paterno, I mean, the Paterno downfall was, I mean, it's quote-unquote, I want to put this in quotes. I mean, it was sad because, you know, it was a guy that had this huge, he was so important to the school. He'd been there forever and ever and ever. He lived in the same house. He was one of the more iconic figures in college football, if not sports. He was national championship winner. So many players came through the program that went on in the NFL that had big careers, that owed their careers to him, owed their opportunities to him. And he got let go by a phone call. Like, they just called him at his house. And then he died. And then he died. A couple of months later, he passed away. And some, you know, and look, I think he was sick. I think he had I think it was cancer or something. But nevertheless, people correlate that to Bear Bryant when Bear Bryant retired.
Yeah.
He passed away not much longer after that. Same kind of thing. You sort of lose your will, your existence, your purpose. But the reality of it is he brought it upon himself. I mean, he had opportunities he knew what was going on. He didn't do anything. He
speak
up. He didn't do it. And you have to suffer the consequences for that. No question. I think it's very difficult to separate those two things. I mean, the Joe Paterno legacy for a young generation that is going to school there now is zero. Zero. I mean, maybe there's a few that remember, like parents went to school there and remember. But if you're 20, like you're 22, you were 9. You know, when that thing was going down. So I have a hard time believing that there's a kid out there that goes, oh, I grew up loving Joe Paterno, and now I'm a sophomore here at Penn State.